All right, guys, we've been going through Philippians. We're getting close now to the end of the second chapter, so we're about halfway through. And we've been looking at the whole issue of the struggle for joy, the Christian life that you and I have, that we walk in, that we are a part of, and we realize that it's not easy. It's a struggle. It's difficult. And nobody ever promised us that it was going to be easy. But the reality is you and I need to be pursuing godliness in our lives. We need to be pursuing growing in our lives as believers in Jesus Christ. Now, you say, George, well, that sounds good, but I really don't know how to do that. I really don't know how to do what it's asking me to do. If only we had some kind of example for us to follow, some kind of example that we could set forth in our mind to be like. Well, it's interesting that you would ask that, because the passage tells us that it's going to give us actually two examples for us to follow. It's going to talk about a guy named Timothy. If you don't know who Timothy is, Timothy's kind of like a son to the Apostle Paul. He had a couple of letters written to him in the New Testament. And another guy who is a friend of the Philippians, whose name is Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus. Aren't you glad we don't name our kids that today? Okay. Hey, Path, come on in. You know, Epaphroditus. And what we're going to see is Paul's going to commend these two men for their lives, and it's going to give us an example to follow. It's going to give us something to think about what you and I should be pursuing in our life. Do you understand? You need to be pursuing something in your Christian life. So oftentimes we just kind of float along. We know we trust in Jesus. We know we're saved. We know we're forgiven. But we just kind of float along, not even thinking about how we should be living our lives. Well, we're going to see a couple of examples here today to help us to know what we should be striving for. Okay? What we should be living for. And then he's going to give us some concluding thoughts there as far as the implications of that for the church. So let's look together. We're going to look at verse 19 through verse 30 of Philippians chapter 2. But I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you shortly, that I also may be encouraged when I know your state. For I have no one like-minded who will sincerely care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ Jesus. But you know his proven character, that he is a son with his father, that he, as a son with his father, he has served with me in the gospel. Therefore, I hope to send him at once, as soon as I see how it goes with me. But I trust in the Lord that I myself shall come shortly. Yet I consider it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, but your messenger and one who ministered to my need. Since he has a longing for you all and was distressed because you had heard he was sick, for indeed he was sick, almost unto death, but God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I have sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore I sent him the more eagerly, that you may see him again, that when you see him again you may rejoice, and I may be less sorrowful. Receive him, therefore, in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such men in esteem, because the work of Christ, he came close to death, not regarding his own life to supply, but what was lacking in your service to me. All right, so we're going to take this passage and break it up into two parts. We're going to look at the example of Timothy, and we're going to look at the example of Epaphroditus. Now, as we look at these examples, I want you to do a couple things. I want you to consider what they're doing, first of all. What is it about these guys that he wants us to see? What's the example that I need to follow here? And then number two, what do you need to do about it? So you're going to see what they're doing, what's commendable about their life, and then you're going to see what you need to change maybe in your own life. Okay? So let's look at both of them. First of all, Timothy. First thing I want you to notice about Timothy is that he would be an encouragement. Paul's sending Timothy to the Philippians for one purpose only, so that they would be encouraged by his presence. So when he shows up and he helps them and he teaches them, that he would be an encouragement to them. So let me ask you a question. When you show up in a room, do people cringe? Or are they encouraged? Question to ask yourself, isn't it? When you show up, are people looking forward to, hey, I'm going to spend time with so-and-so today. Man, that's going to be a really good time. Or do they say something like this, you know, I got to spend time with that guy. Pray for me. Because it's not good. Because usually an interaction with you maybe isn't good. You're not an encouragement. Okay? So here's what we see about Timothy. He would be an encouragement to him. That's why he's sending them to him, because he knows that just his presence is going to be an encouragement to them. Okay? Here's the second thing we're going to see about him. He was genuinely concerned for others. Timothy was genuinely concerned for other people. Look with me at verse 20. I have no one like-minded who will sincerely care for your state. Paul says, there's nobody else I can send you that was just like me, that thinks just like me, who is genuinely concerned for you. That's the kind of guy that Timothy was. Timothy was the kind of guy that would think about the needs of other people and being there. He wasn't just interested in being an encouragement. He was interested in being there because he was concerned for people. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because he was genuinely concerned for people. You know what I'm talking about. You and I meet people all the time. We come in contact with people all the time. But there are certain people that you meet that you know that they're good people because what? Because they're genuinely concerned about other people. You know, I can go talk to that person because I know that person is what? Concerned for me. That's an example to follow, isn't it? That's what we need to be lifting up in our churches, is that kind of an example. Because that's what we need to be striving for as people, is to be the kind of person, listen, the kind of person that would be genuinely concerned for other people. Now, he tells us something in verse 21, that kind of person stands out. Look at what it says there, verse 21. For all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ. What's he saying here? This stands out in our self-centered world. So what do you think about that? Timothy would be a standout guy. Why? Because he's going against the grain of what our world says. What does our world say? Our world says, our culture says, if nobody's going to take care of you, you're out of luck. If you don't do it yourself. Our world says that you got to do it for yourself because nobody else will. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and if you don't eat, somebody's going to eat you. And so our world is so self-focused, so individual-focused, that it's all about you or nobody else. Isn't that any reason why our culture is in trouble? Our marriages are in trouble? Because our whole focus is on what? Ourselves? Rather than on each other or on others in general? And so when you got a guy like Timothy, who's number one, an encouragement, and number two, is really concerned for others, that stands out. Because this world that we live in, this culture that we live in, it's all about what I want. You know? I mean, it's like the other day I heard that Burger King, how many decades is changing their logo? You know, their logo used to be, have it your way. You remember that? You go to Burger King and you can have it your way at Burger King. They're changing that now. I don't know what it is, but maybe our culture is changing. I doubt it. But the reality is that the way we want it? Our way, right? So when you've got a guy like Timothy, who's what? An encouragement, and who stands out, that, my friends, is so contrasted to where our culture is. So contrasted. So then he goes on one other thing. Then he says this about his character. Look at verse 22. But you know his proven character. Here's what I want you to see about him. He has proven character in his service. He has proven his character in his service. You know what's missing a lot today in our discussion about being a believer? What's missing in our discussion about being a believer is you developing your character. You becoming like Christ in your character. You producing the fruits of the Spirit, which are issues of character. You pursuing those issues, like what Peter would say in 2 Peter chapter 1. The issues of character. When you look at Peter, when you look at Timothy, Paul is saying his character is proven. He has shown himself to you continually to be a man of character. You don't hear that kind of talk anymore, do you? That you and I need to be men and women of what? Character. So for instance, there was a time when people would say, well, I'll just take your word because you need to be a man of what? A man of your word. Remember that time? Those times don't exist anymore, right? Unless it's written down, signed, and notarized. And even then that can be thrown out, right? There is no such thing as agreement now based upon your character. We don't talk about character because we assume that everybody's a what? A schmuck. Do you know what I mean? We just assume that everybody's going to do you what? Wrong. Am I not right? We just make the assumption that everybody is wrong, that everybody's out to fend for themselves, and that nobody has any what? Character. But listen to Timothy. The man's an encouragement to others. The man is concerned for others. His life stands out in front of others. And here's what Paul says. He has a proven character. He has a proven character in his service. What service? In his service for Christ. His ministry to other people. Isn't that something we need to be thinking about? So let me just stop for a moment. What are we talking about here? We're talking about being on that journey, that struggle for joy, okay? Of trying to find the joy of Christ in our life and the struggle of the everyday Christian walk. Okay? We want to be all that we want to be. And every one of you here have expressed at some point that you want to go deeper in your relationship with Jesus. Is that true? You want to go deeper in your relationship with Jesus. Well, let me explain to you what that means to go deeper. And what does it mean to be on that journey? Okay? Let me explain it to you. What it means is this. Is you becoming the man or woman that Christ wants you to be. Do you understand what I'm saying? It means you becoming the man or woman that Christ wants you to be. Now, here's what that means. Okay, because I could say that, and that's all nice church talk, and that's all nice Christianese language, and what does that mean, George, when you say, I become like Jesus, I become the man or woman that he wants me to be? What does that mean? Here's what it means, okay? So the rubber meets the road. Everybody understands what I'm talking about. It means you change the way you are. And you deal with the attitudes that you think are okay but are wrong. And you deal with the habits that you think are okay but are wrong. And you change in the character of who you are. And you become more like Jesus in your character. It means you change. Does everybody understand? You change. Now, you say, really? Really? You think I need to change? Yeah, you need to change. If you don't believe me, ask your spouse. Does your spouse need to change? Oh no, I love him the way he is. Really? Oh, I just think she's perfect. Nothing needs to change. At least you thought that when you got married. How about if you've been married a while? Do you know what I'm saying? Some of you are like, I'm not saying nothing. I don't want to get in trouble. Right? Okay, so does everybody understand we need to change? Okay? We need to change, right? You've got attitudes. You've got things that need to be adjusted. So does everybody understand that salvation, let me just help you to comprehend here. Salvation isn't fire insurance. Get that out of your mind. That's a benefit. Not going to hell is a benefit. But that's not what salvation is all about. Salvation is about you changing. You becoming the person of God that you were meant to be that got corrupted by sin. That's why you're forgiven. That's why you're given a new mind. That's why you're given the Holy Spirit to give you strength to change. Don't you want to change? I mean, I'm serious. I mean, there's not a day that doesn't go by that I think about, I wish things were different. Wish I wasn't struggling in this area. Wish I wasn't wrestling with this thing. I wish I didn't give in to that thing. I wish I had a better attitude. I wish I had a personality change. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, if you're just happy the way you are, we need to talk. Seriously. Because all of us need to adjust. Did you understand what I'm saying? So here's what I want you to see. When we talk about the journey, we're talking about a journey of change that takes a lifetime, where He begins to reveal one area after another that we need to change. You know, here's the thing, guys. I've been a believer now almost 30 years. 30 years ago, as a freshman engineering student, I gave my life to Jesus. And almost immediately, He began to show me things in my life that needed to change. Now, I'm going to tell you something right now. 30 years later, He's still showing me things. But here's what I'm going to tell you. If He had showed me the things He's showing me now, I couldn't have handled them 30 years ago. What is He doing? It's like, I'm not in the gardening, and I sure don't like the kitchen. But every once in a while, I got to peel onions. You know what I'm talking about when you peel onions? It's like what? One layer after another? You know? And it's like God's peeling you. And you're an onion. Okay, look to your neighbor right now and say, you're an onion. Okay, all right. So you're an onion, and God is peeling away the layers. He's peeling away the layers of junk in your life. Because the reality is when we look at an example like Timothy, and we see that he's an encouragement, that he's genuinely concerned for others, so much so that he stands out from the rest of the culture, and that his character is proven, we look at that and we say, man, I want to be like that. But I'm not like that right now. Because I'm anything but an encouragement when I get with people. And my character isn't proven. And right now, I'm only focused on myself. But see, that's what we need to be striving for in our life. That's Timothy. There's one other example here. It's Epaphroditus. Let's look at him, Epaphroditus. Look with me, verse 25 to 26. Yet I consider it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker and fellow soldier, but your messenger and one who ministered in my need, since he was longing for you all. What do I want you to see about? He felt for others. He felt for others. Now, I'm going to explain something to you. That is going one step beyond being concerned for others. What do you mean, George? Well, I can be concerned for you, but that doesn't necessarily mean I feel for you. Do you know what I mean? But when I feel for you, your pain becomes my pain. Do you understand what I'm saying? Your agony becomes my agony. Your heartache becomes my heartache. Your difficulty becomes my difficulty. I begin to take on your feelings as I carry it for you. You know what I'm talking about? Sometimes you hear about a close friend that's going through something and you feel for them. You feel the agony of what they're going through. That's more than just concern, isn't it? Because you could just be concerned and not think about anything. Oh, you know, it's too bad about so-and-so. Oh, yeah, I'm really concerned for them. Hey, pass the pizza, will you? It doesn't affect you. Epaphroditus longed for them. He wanted to be with them. He felt for them. Did you understand what I'm saying? He wanted to see their faces. He was concerned that they were concerned about him. That's really going beyond just being concerned for others, isn't it? Some of us, we just need to take that first step. Quit focusing on ourselves and be concerned about others. That's the first step. But there's a second step here. The second step is that as I'm concerned for others, I begin to feel others' pain. Do you understand what I'm saying? That I'm not so focused on myself that I begin to not just be concerned about you, but I begin to feel what you're feeling. I begin to have empathy for you. That when you're in agony, I'm in agony. Now, isn't that great to have friends like that? When you're going through it, let me tell you something. When I'm going through it, I don't need somebody coming up and saying, oh, hey, man, I'll pray for you. And then I never see him again, never hear from him again. You don't need that, do you? When you're going through it, and life is throwing the kitchen sink, and the dishwasher, and the oven, and the refrigerator at you all at one time, you just don't want somebody who's concerned for you. You want somebody who's crying with you. Who's feeling it. Who's there experiencing it with you. Who's got their arm around you. Right? Am I the only one who wants somebody like that? I think we all do, right? This is the kind of dude Epaphroditus was. He longed for them. He felt for them. He felt for them. Here's what else we see about Epaphroditus. He was a source of joy. Look with me, verse 27, 28. For indeed he was sick and almost unto death, but God had mercy on him, not only for him, but also on me, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. But therefore I sent him the more eagerly, that when you see him again, you may rejoice. Epaphroditus was the kind of guy that when he walked into the room, people were happy to see him. Joy came into their life. You know, isn't that what we're talking about? The struggle for joy. We want to pursue joy in our life. We want to pursue joy in our everyday life. You know how you find joy? People. People bring you joy. And Epaphroditus was the kind of guy that when he entered into your life, joy was there. So let me ask you a question. What do people think when you walk into the room? Oh my goodness, there he is. Or they're like, wow, he's here! Alright, let the party begin! Because there's excitement, there's joy! Don't you want to be the kind of person that brings joy to people? I'm not asking whether or not you are that kind of person right now. Okay? But don't you want to walk into a room and be a blessing? Isn't that what we want? Now you say, well, I got a long way to go to be there. You know, I'm a product of my life, and my life's been pretty bad, and yeah, I'm a grump, but I'm a grumpy for a reason. And well, yeah, come on, but everybody can get overcome their grumpiness. Grumpiness is just not an excuse. Having a terrible life is not an excuse. It's what you choose to do with it. And whether or not you choose to be a blessing to people. Do you understand what I'm saying? Here's the problem. I'm going to be honest with you. I see this all the time. You know, I have pastor friends, and they'll say, I saw so-and-so, and so-and-so's upset with me because I didn't say hi to him in Goodman's. Dude, are you living for your preacher to say hi to you in Goodman's? If that's true, you need a life. Because your preacher, some preachers are busy too. You know, I go to a grocery store, I'm focused on my list that Lori gave me. Like, I did make this mistake yesterday. She sent me a text, get these four items. I only see three of the items. And I forget the fourth one. Guess where I had to go again? Back to the store. So I'm focused on what Lori wants, not saying hi to you. Because I can say hi to you and still get in trouble. I don't want to be in trouble. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if your life is all focused on whether or not somebody's paying attention to you, get a life. And let me tell you how you get the life. You quit focusing on yourself. And you start focusing on others. Did you understand what I'm saying? You be a joy that when you walk in the room, people say, wow, aren't you glad they're here? But we're so self-absorbed. So look, we're looking at two different dudes here. We're looking at Timothy and we're looking at Epaphroditus. What stands out about them? They're concerned for other people over themselves. And they blessed other people by their presence. That's the example to follow. Do you know what I'm saying? That's the example to follow. That's what we should be striving for. Quit focusing on ourselves. You know, here's the thing. I'm just be flat out honest with you. The last 6 months, the first half of this year, I was in a rut. I was in some kind of a garbage heap of life type thing. And you know what? I realized what it was. I was focusing on George. Now, I don't communicate that to you. I don't walk around and say, I'm self-absorbed today. Okay? Nobody walks around like that, although some people you can tell that with. I mean, but I wasn't walking around saying, oh, my whole life is on me. No, but I was. And I was miserable. Thank God I'm out of that. You know what gets you out of it? Quit focusing on yourself. Start focusing on other people. You say, you got like that? You did it? Yeah, I'm human. When we start putting the blinders on and all we see is what we want and what our stuff is, we get to be, we're miserable. And believe me, other people know because who wants to hang around miserable? Right? Now, let me tell you something. What kind of dude was Timothy and what kind of dude was Epaphroditus that the Philippians, as soon as they walked in, they had joy. They were glad to see them. They knew there was going to be encouragement. Their character was proven. Isn't that an example to follow? Now, here's what he tells us that we need to do with that, because this is where the encouragement comes in. Look with me at verse 29. Receive him, therefore, in the Lord with all gladness. What is he talking about here? Recognize that they are a gift from God. That's what the term receive there is. It's like receiving a gift. Recognize them with gladness. Now, have you noticed that Christmas, have you noticed the mood on Christmas morning is one of sadness and glum and despair? And misery. Have you noticed that that's the Christmas spirit on Christmas morning in your house? Have you noticed that? Especially if you have little kids. Like, oh, this is so terrible. Can't believe I'm getting 10 gifts. Have you noticed that? No, it's not that way, is it? It's like, they're excited. What am I getting? Is it over? Can't be over yet. I'm going to play with my... And they're like all excited. There's gladness in the home, right, on Christmas morning, right? Because they've received what? Gifts. Have you noticed that's the spirit at a birthday party? Now, when you get older, it's terrible because you start realizing how old you are. But when you're younger, yeah, bring on the gifts. Right? They're received with gladness. This is what he's talking about. He's talking about receiving these two guys with gladness. Now, here's the point for you and I as a church. As God raises up within our church, if we're striving to be all that He wants us to be, as we're striving to go deeper with Jesus, because that's what you want, right? You want to go deeper with Him. As we're striving to go deeper with Jesus, here's what's going to happen. You're going to become like Timothy, and you're going to become like Epaphroditus. And that's going to be a blessing to the church. And so the attitude, the encouragement of the church is to recognize that when God raises up those kind of people in our church, that's a gift. Isn't it? To have people that feel for others, to have people that are concerned for others, to have people that bring joy into a room when they walk in, to have people who are like that, that's a gift from God. Receive it as a gift. Receive it with gladness. Be excited that, you know what, the best testimony could be about a church is they're happy. They love each other. I mean, I hear testimonies of churches and they're like, yeah, everybody's mad at each other. Or there's just a thickness in the air when people walk in. You know what I'm talking about? The encouragement is that we have these kind of people in our midst. Isn't that what we should be striving for? Here's the other thing it tells us. Honor those who live out these qualities. Look at what it says there, verse 29. And hold such men in esteem. The word esteem there means honor. We're to honor. You know, rather than tooting the horn about, oh, so-and-so did this, and isn't it wonderful that they're a great teacher, or isn't it wonderful that he's a great preacher, or blah, blah, blah. We lift up people. Isn't it wonderful that they agonized over their friend? Isn't it wonderful that they were there for their friend when they were in the midst of things? Isn't it wonderful that they brought joy into the room? Honor these kind of people. This is what we need to be honoring in the church. This is what we need to be lifting up in the church. It's this kind of attitude. It's this kind of qualities. Wow, wouldn't our church be different if that's what we started pursuing? What do you think we'd be like a year from now? What do you think we would be like a year from now if we pursued these qualities? These are examples to follow, aren't they? These are examples to follow. So here, what do we do with this? Two questions. Number one, and again, this is for you. Don't talk about this with anybody else, but this is for you. What does your life reveal about you? Look in the mirror. Look in the mirror. Ask yourself that question. And be flat out honest. Quit playing games. Be real for a moment. Nobody's looking. It's just you looking in the mirror. What does your life reveal about you? What does your life reveal about you? What does your checkbook reveal about you? What does your bank account reveal about you? Now, what are you bringing in the money for, George? Well, your heart is where your money is, and what you spend your money on reveals where your heart is. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because if your checkbook reveals that you help out people, then that says something about you. Look at where you spend your time. Look at where you spend your time. Because where you spend your time, that reveals what about who? You. Because if you have no time during the week for other people, that says something, doesn't it? Well, I show up for church an hour. It's more than just showing up for church an hour. If you think that spending time with people is just being in church for an hour, come on. You listen to music, you sing, and you listen to a lecture. Come on. There's more to it than that. What does your life reveal about you? And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be honest with you because this is true for myself. You're going to look in the mirror and you're not going to like what you see. Because if you're honest, you're not going to like what you see. Because here's what's going to be revealed. George is going to look in the mirror and George is going to be revealed to be selfish. Is that what you're going to see there for yourself? Now, can I add a little side note here? If you're not bothered by that, there's a problem. Because you can look in the mirror and reveal yourself to be selfish and not be bothered by that. But if you look in the mirror and you see that you're selfish, and you don't feel for it, you got a problem. Here's the second thing. What kind of an example is it for others? So when you think about your life and you living out your life, what kind of an example is it for others? We say, well, I'm not like Timothy. I'm not going into a church and having some sort of leadership role. And I'm not like Epaphroditus where I have a role in that church. You know, so it's just me and my own life. I'm not an example to anybody. Really? You're missing the point. You're an example to somebody. Period. Especially if they know you're a Christian. You're an example of something. If you're a parent, you're an example to your kids. You're an example of something. You're an example to someone. Period. You need to grasp the reality. So let me ask you the question. What does your life reveal about yourself, and what kind of an example is that to other people? That will scare you, those two questions. Because it's so easy to think, well, it's just me. I'm living myself. I'm just doing my own thing. No, nobody lives to themselves. That's a lie. You are living for somebody else. Somebody's looking at you. So what do you do about it? Here's your action point. You ask the Spirit to help you to live what you believe before others. You live what you believe before others. You say you believe Jesus? Fine. You live it out then. You say you love God? Great. Wonderful. You live it out then. You say you're concerned about others? Don't give it lip service. You live it out. But you live out what you believe. Because if you don't, that has a term all for its own for that. It's called hypocrisy. So you live out what you believe. You become a blessing. Now here's the thing. I'll close with this. Some of you hear God speaking to you about it yourself, and you're saying, well, you know what? When I walk in a room, I'm not an encouragement. People cringe. Okay, yeah. So what are you going to do about it? Because you can change. I can't change. Are you breathing? You still got a pulse? As long as you're alive, you can change. If you're dead, there's no changing. He changes you then. But as long as you're alive, you can change. And so if you want to be like Timothy, and if you want to be like an Epaphroditus, where you bring joy into a room, you bring encouragement, and you haven't been that way, then you got to ask the Spirit to help you. Because He's the one who changes you. And if He's speaking to you and revealing to you that you need to change, don't look at it and say, well, that's impossible. I can't change now. I'm stuck in a rut. Then get out of your rut. Ask for some help, but you can change. Because He's the one who changes. And become a blessing. And my, let's see a year from now what we'll be like, right? Let's hope that a year from now, that we'll be a lot different place. Because we had followed their examples. Let's pray.